What's up, freaks? This episode of RHR was brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. Do you have an old IRA or 401k that isn't keeping up with Bitcoin? Have you seen Bitcoin lately? I find it hard to imagine that it's keeping up. Rolled over into an Unchained Bitcoin IRA and take advantage of Bitcoin's long-term potential while enjoying tax-deferred growth. With Unchained, you hold real Bitcoin and keep control of your keys, reducing counterparty risk through their collaborative custody model while Unchained handles the tax forms. Get started now with no setup fees and no account fee for the first year. Not only is this the only standard Bitcoin IRA where you can control keys, unlike other Bitcoin IRAs, you can take distributions directly in Bitcoin, avoiding exchange fees. Set up a Roth or traditional Bitcoin IRA for no charge today at unchained.com/RHR. That's unchained.com/RHR and experience true ownership of your retirement savings. Do it now, freaks. Unchained's the best Bitcoin financial services team in the world. Unchained.com/RHR. This was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. And guess what? They need you. They've got bounties out there that need to be completed, and you're going to get KYC free sats for completing them. So if you think you have what it takes, if you're a software developer looking to make some Bitcoin, go to community.sphinx.chat/bounties to sign up and get paid. Again, these are KYC free sats. They've paid out multiple Bitcoin via this bounty program already. They want to open it up. They've got a lot more work that needs to be get done. So if you have software development skills and you can get some stuff done on this bounty board, go check it out. Get some KYC free sats, excuse me. And they will be adding more skills soon. So beyond just pure software development, go check it out. community.sphinx.chat/bounties.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
You talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
We're here to smash the fiat system. Happy Boxing Day, freaks. Happy Boxing Day, Matt.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas as well. Yeah. Happy belated Christmas. What a day. I'm a little envious that you get to spend it at your house in the comfort of your own bed. It is great being home with family. Staying at my father-in-law's house. Obviously, he's got a beautiful bar in his basement. A nice old baseball bat that I get to use as a prop in today's episode. But I miss my bed.
Was that not a gift? That's just the OG bat?
Yeah, the OG bat of the bar. Somebody gets out of hand here. They get this side of the head.
Yeah, this is the first time we haven't traveled in Christmas in a bit. So that was nice.
I will say it's been great spending time with family and friends. I've told this story before. In this house, we have to walk by the youngest bed to get to our bed. And it's torturous and potentially dangerous if he wakes up when we're sneaking to bed at like 12:30, 1 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, you have a ton of family in the Northeast, which is awesome. Just like how big your like extended family is. Centrally ish located without doxing too much. We don't have that in my family or my wife's family. So we're like planting a flag in the sand. Like they travel to us, and I think it's going to work. So that's our strategy going forward.
Did it work this year?
Yes. It's like the early days of it working. I think it'll work better in the years to come.
Yeah. It's been a great break so far. Christmas on a Wednesday is awesome. You basically get a full week. Obviously, we're working today, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but
it's a labor of love. Took the boys. It snowed when we landed on Friday night, and so my boys got to go sledding for the first time this weekend, which was a very special treat. It was funny to watch them in their
element. Marty sent me some videos, and it was the cutest thing ever. Like, he was making dad sounds in the background of the camera. Wonderful.
Sorry about that. I was pulling up the live chat.
Well, you're good. I don't know what you're apologizing about.
Your one comment of the dad noises I was making. It is funny. I was not expecting. I was nervous. Your son's on a saucer flying down a hill at high speed.
Super fast.
And I'm like, oh, sorry, bro.
That was great.
It's great. We had a little Christmas pump, too. We hit 99.
I know. And then we woke up to I said to my wife as we were going to sleep, I was like, everyone buying those last minute Christmas gifts. And then we woke up in the morning and she looked at the block clock. She's like, everyone's selling those last minute Christmas gifts.
Where are we right now? Let's just jump into Clark's dashboard and then we'll go from there. I have a clip I want to set the tone of the episode with. Inflation. Since 1992. We're up from this morning. When I woke up, we were at 95,000. We're currently at $96,080 according to Clark's dashboard. $1 is going to get you 1,041 sats. We're at a $1.9 trillion market cap. We're at block height 876,472, which means we are 488 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment estimated to be on the 29th, so that's Sunday. Right now, it's looking relatively flat. Blocks have been coming in at 9 minutes and 59 seconds on average, and it's looking like we'll have an upwards adjustment of 0.3%. So relatively flat. Difficulty at an all-time high, going up a little bit in a few days. There are currently 96,089 transactions in Clark's dashboard. If we go over to mempool.space, I had to open up Chrome for this new setup, and so mempool is not memorized on Chrome yet. 220,677 transactions in mempool's mempool. That is the state of the network. We are here.
I onboarded Marty to my new travel setup, so we have him in clear 4K with the new mic. Love to 4K. See it.
How is the mic, Logan? Is it good?
It's good. You sound good.
Good. Like it.
It's clearly a step below the big Shure mics, but it's so much easier to travel with. Yeah. Like, especially now that we have children, it's like 95% of the stuff that's packed is for the kids. So if you're able to reduce the size a little bit on the camera and the mic side, it's massive.
I've been wearing the same two pairs of pants for almost a week now. We pack light, two check bags, no carry-ons other than backpacks. My wife was adamant about packing light because we're going to have to bring stuff back.
Yeah, but like, I'm right? Like, even when you pack light, it just means you and her pack light. And then it's like the majority is for the kids.
Yeah. That's what, like, new mic setup fits in this little box, this little bag. It's perfect.
The camera is the key. Like, the camera is so fucking good for how small it is.
Especially, when you have young kids in there.
On mine right now because Paul is, our producer is out for Christmas. So I'm on the same camera as you right now. I just have a huge light though because I'm in the studio. The light is key. Yeah. We're figuring it out, freaks. 2025 is going to be a bigger year than ever. What is this? This is our sixth Christmas rip for a Rabbit Hole Recap. Or maybe, is there a seventh? It's our fifth Christmas rip.
The first year is the only week we've ever missed. We decided on Christmas.
Oh, it's Christmas? We do
it. Yeah.
There you go. Well, fake news. So fifth. Still
fifth year in a row. Yeah, 2019 on. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. No, six. Sixth in a row.
Ryder dies in the Zap stream. I don't see any zaps. Are the zaps not working?
It's a great way to neg people into zapping. I love it.
I'm just trying to test if the zaps are working or not.
Logan, why don't we pull up that video you can go no sound. Try and make it like full screen if you can. But this was floating around.
He can't. He can never make it full screen. Like, this is not our first time trying to do it.
Do something, Logan. Just do something.
Breaks the screen share. I'm just going to play this.
So this is for those listening at home. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, comparing the nightly rate of a presidential suite at the palace. What's it called? What is it called?
The Palace Hotel?
The Plaza Hotel. There we go. The Plaza Hotel in 1992 when Kevin McAllister checked in under his dad's name after stealing his credit card after getting lost in New York. $355.90 a night in 1992. And some internet sleuth compared it to today. And the price was $4,555 a night. So people ran the numbers. And that is an annualized inflation rate since 1992 of 8% for the Plaza Hotel presidential
suite. Yeah, that lines up.
And you compare this to CPI where they would argue that inflation has been between 2 and 3% over that time period. Basically averaged out. And so inflation is more than 2.5 to 4 times what's being reported. And it is literally criminal that the CPI is telling people that the prices have only gone up this much. And you have to imagine.
Go on. What were you saying?
I haven't stayed at the Plaza Hotel anytime recently, but you have to imagine that the quality of service that is there today is maybe not as high as it was in 1992 when everybody's wearing tuxes.
I would hope that if you're paying $4,000 a night, you're getting really good service.
I would hope.
But I wouldn't know. But so I would say like right now, real inflation is probably like 10 to 12%. It's hard to tell. It's hard to quantify. But these types of memes, right? You know, looking at like this hits the average person quite hard. Like it's very obvious that the money's broken. You can directionally tell that inflation is ripping out of control, regardless of the exact numbers.
Yeah.
And they think we're blind. They think we just don't realize. Like, of course people realize. Like, you're going to shop for groceries, you realize.
Yeah, and at the end of the movie, they only showed, like, the nightly rate in this clip that we just showed. But at the end of the movie, if you remember, Kevin, while he was staying at the Plaza Hotel, took out a lot of room service, charged a lot to the room. And Mr. McAllister is freaking out over a $900 room service bill at the end, as if it were an astronomical expense added onto the room, which today would be like, that makes sense. $900 for 4 days of room service and buying stuff at the hotel. Wouldn't it be out of the realm of insanity?
I mean, I remember there was like a stupid Disney movie when we were growing up where this kid like discovers like a blank check and he writes $1 million into it. Yeah. And he just writes $1 million and he like buys a house. He does like all this different shit. It's like 10 Bitcoin.
Yeah. He had a slide.
Or like who wants to be a millionaire? Like when we were growing up, like $1 million was a massive amount of money. I mean, we're also kids. Like, I remember, like, $10 was, like, a big deal. Like, it could go a long way. Yeah. By the way, Zaps are working. Ride or Die Freak Easy of No Bullshit Bitcoin zapped us 21,000 sats. So the test was successful.
Wild Hustle with 121 sats. And our boy Carlos probably appreciating the morning rip with 1,000 sats.
He loves the morning rips. Yeah. He messaged me on Signal. He was like, oh shit, you responded. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody. All right, let's
Carlos is re-listening to all of the old Rabbit Hole recaps. And he's in 2019 right now, and he was asking me if the stacking sats shirts still exist.
I had the logo somewhere. We can spin it back up if you guys want to.
Yeah, let's. Maybe we should try and find the logo. That brought me back.
The honey,
I still have mine.
Stacking sets. Shout out to my college roommate for designing that Stacking Sats logo with my artistic direction. We do. Everybody's always asking for merch. Merch is hard. You spin up the store. You sell quite a bit in the first week, and then it just sits there. You got to manage inventory and all that.
I recorded with Jack Mallers, our boy, on Monday, and one of the new coiners in the comments was accusing me of just talking down about me because he's like he just keeps repeating played out catchphrases that you hear on Bitcoin Twitter. It's like, bitch, I coined that fucking term.
There's a lot of pre-coiners out there. They're going to learn. They're going to have to go back and do what Carlos is doing, listen to the whole catalog.
Yeah. We coined the term pre-coiners.
Did we?
Yeah, damn right we did. It was originally, I mean, I remember us originally using it as a derogatory. It was like if a Bitcoin denier was...
No, it's no coiner. No coiner was derogatory. Then it was like, no from the pre-coiners.
No, pre-coiner was even more derogatory originally because it was like you were insinuating that even though they hated Bitcoin, they were eventually going to have to use Bitcoin. So it was like it was even more of a knife hit, you know, than a no-coiner.
Yeah,
but it is also more positive.
It is. We did a TFTC rip. I mentioned it last week. It was published on Monday with the War Mode boys. I think we successfully converted them from pre-coiners to coiners. The reception, it's been funny seeing the War Mode audience get introduced to Bitcoin or do their first Bitcoin deep dive via that episode. I think we made some positive headway there in terms of getting the message out.
Love to see it. But it was. Do they have their own? They have their own podcast.
Yeah, they're big on Patreon. They're like a top 30.
But they were on your podcast though, right? Or did you co-stream it? Like, did they put it on their feed as well?
They haven't yet, but I think they're going to.
They should. You should tell them to put it on their feed too. It's more important to be on their feed.
Yeah, they're going to. They have a pretty massive Patreon. I think they're like a top 30 on that platform. Boom, boom, boom. All right, let's get to the list. If you recall, a couple of weeks ago, we were playing videos of Vladimir Putin explaining why Bitcoin was here to stay because nobody could ban it. A few weeks later, Russia enacts a 6-year blanket ban on Bitcoin mining in 10 regions, citing energy supply constraints. And so they're essentially saying Bitcoin miners are getting signaled out and cannot consume energy in these 10 regions throughout Russia. I think it's not surprising whether it's Russia or China. They flip-flop. They're posturing on Bitcoin multiple times a year, and in this case, within a couple weeks.
Well, so this is a pair of stories, right? So I think this lines up with the thesis that we've discussed for years on the show, which is dictators both want Bitcoin. They want to use Bitcoin themselves and get the benefits out of Bitcoin themselves. And then they don't want their people to use it without permission. Right. And this is the beautiful game theory at play, because they need it. So they can never fully ban it. They can try to ban it. They can make it more difficult. Mining specifically, larger mining operations have real physical footprints that can be tracked and coerced. But the second story is that one of their ministers came out and said that Russia is using Bitcoin for foreign trade. So at the same time that they're using Bitcoin to actually conduct trade globally, they're cracking down on it internally, which lines up pretty much exactly with how we expect this stuff to play out.
Yeah, and just to expand on that second story, this was reported in Reuters out of Moscow yesterday. Russian companies have begun using Bitcoin and other digital currencies in international payments following legislative changes that allowed such use in order to counter Western sanctions. Finance Minister Anton Sulonov said on Wednesday, sanctions have complicated Russia's trade with major partners such as China or Turkey, as local banks are extremely cautious with Russia-related transactions to avoid scrutiny from Western regulators. This year, Russia permitted the use of cryptocurrencies in foreign trade, has taken steps to make it legal to mine cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, except for in those 10 regions. And Reuters is reporting that Russia is one of the global leaders in Bitcoin mining. As part of the experimental regime, it is possible to use Bitcoins, which we had mined here in Russia, in foreign trade transactions. So they're mining Bitcoin, using it in foreign trade. Such transactions are already occurring. We believe they should be expanded and developed further. I'm confident this will happen next year, he said, adding that international payments and digital currencies represent the future. Earlier this month, because of Putin saying that you can't ban Bitcoin. But I think that last sentence there from the finance minister's comments, we believe they should be expanded and developed further. I'm confident this will happen next year. Cryptocurrency transactions. I think the important comment here is, I would imagine that Russia, I mean, the big meme over the last couple of years has been the use of stable coins in international cross-border payments, due to the ease of use of sending tokenized dollars over a blockchain like Tron or Solana over over the SWIFT system. But when it comes to Russia, as we know, these stablecoins are centralized at the end of the day. And whether it's Circle, Tether, any other stablecoin issuer, they could potentially be forced to freeze Russian stablecoin transactions if Western governments deem that to be breaking sanctions. And so I imagine they'll actually be forced to use Bitcoin to do this over stablecoins.
Yeah, Bitcoin fixes that. The whole point of Bitcoin is that you don't have to trust the counterparty. And Bitcoin fixes both sides of that, right? So just in the way that no one can stop Russia from using it for foreign transactions is the same way that Putin can't stop his citizens from using it without his permission. So I think it's important for people to realize that with this mining ban specifically, what it really is doing, if you read between the lines, is if you don't mine in a way that is approved by the Kremlin, then you might be discovered and you might be punished. But I still expect them to mine heavily. They're just going to mine in a way, you know, it'll be permission mining, right? Mining that is agreed to by Putin. And he gets his cut and he gets his piece of control.
Yeah, that's an interesting variable to the geopolitical incentives, as mining, obviously, a lot of discussion this year around mining has been the centralization of mining pools, which we've talked about at length. Many people believe that as these nation states get in, they're going to center transactions more. And there is, I think Alex Berg, we discussed this in Riga this summer. And I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, his position is that the nation states getting in is actually good in terms of censorship resistance, because you're going to have sort of Western dominant mining pools of hash rate, if you will, and Eastern pools of hash rate, and the other one's going to try to censor the other. And so you just have this embedded gridlock and her check on power, where if the West begins censoring transactions of Russia, they'll just use their mining power to include it. And who knows, maybe.
Yeah, they're never going to agree.
No.
That's the beauty of the whole thing.
It is. I mean, we've been talking about the SBR for the better part of 5 months since July when Trump gave that speech at the Bitcoin conference in Nashville. But this is, I mean, maybe not as profound, but as close to as profound as you can get as an announcement like that, where Russia's like, we're openly and transparently going to evade Western sanctions by using Bitcoin as a settlement network.
Well, I mean, they're also, they must be stacking, right? Not only the government, but Putin himself is probably one of the richest men in the world. And no one knows exactly how rich he is. Like, he's always kept that very quiet. Like, you can't find out Putin's net worth, but he is most definitely one of the richest men in the world. And I'd be very surprised if he doesn't have a big stack of coin. So we're starting to see this, you know, it's like the space race, but with Bitcoin.
Yeah. And it's juxtaposing the Russian announcement with the strategic Bitcoin reserve. It really highlights the two most important properties of Bitcoin, and at different points in time, people tend to over-index for one of the properties over the other, but you really can't have either without having both. And that's the scarce asset, 21 million. What's going to incentivize people to actually go out and buy electricity and set up infrastructure to facilitate transactions and mine blocks to be rewarded in Bitcoin? And then the P2P distributed nature of the protocol that enables you to route around censorship.
And you need both.
Yeah.
If you can't spend your savings without permission, you have no money. You literally have no money. Like, there's no way. Like, if you're saving in something, and then at the end of the day you can't access those savings and use it on things you need without asking someone's permission, you have no savings. You literally just have an IOU. You have no money. Good money needs to be both. It's not an either or, and it's just a constant internal September of people thinking it's an either or and then fighting over one side or the other when it's both.
Oh. It's happening in real time too. I see somebody in the YouTube chat saying super cycle. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, let's pull up the halving tracker.
Pull up the halving tracker, Logan.
Shout out Dr. Jeff, who's apped us 10,000 sats, saying, Merry Christmas, fellas. Thanks for the rants, rips, and educational tips. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you for being Nostr only. Appreciate you. Yeah, so if you look at the halving tracker, it's actually kind of lining up pretty similar to the 2016 run. That's like the line I'm watching. But like, for this to be a super cycle, I would think at least definitionally it should be outperforming all of the other cycles. And it's like not even fucking close to the first cycle. But it hasn't even, you know, we'll see where it plays out over time. But I mean, I think it depends on what your definition of a super cycle is. But I think this cycle has a real chance to outperform what it would otherwise, but will still be a cycle regardless, and we'll still see a massive drawdown at some point when people get overly bullish and overly leveraged, as is tradition.
Yeah, a lot of longs wiped out last week. We hit 108.
But I'm watching that 2016 line, which is like, that would put us around like a 2 million top.
Is that the purple one?
That's not a price prediction. No, the green one. If you see last cycle, we went up earlier than the 2016 cycle. That's the light blue line. And then FTX, Celsius, they were all playing paper Bitcoin games, and I think they suppressed us. And then this time we have the ETFs, and we have the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, and we have a bunch of different governments all fighting for a stake in the network. And we have MicroStrategy that's just fucking supercharged. People forget this is Saylor just completed his first cycle. Now he's like really in his element. So it will most likely be amplified, is my guess, with the top being more amplified. But we'll still have if you're not operating under the assumption of an 80% drawdown, you're probably going to get wrecked. That said, you also shouldn't like wait for an 80% drawdown to buy Bitcoin. I mean, what's an 80% drawdown from 2 million? I don't even, higher than we're currently at.
Yeah.
And it might not happen. You never know. One day it probably won't happen. So I'm just going to stay humble, stack sats about it. I'll probably be incredibly bullish at the top, not see it coming, hold all the way through the 80% drawdown, and just spend Bitcoin as I need to. That's going to be my strategy.
It's a good strategy. Seems to have worked well.
Yeah, see, it was like really easy math. 400K would be, go to 2 million, come back down to 400.
I wouldn't be too mad about that.
Yeah, you'd be cool with that?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. All right, moving on. News out of El Salvador.
Rob okay in the Zap stream is trying to catch me on one, asking if that's an X account you should follow, the halving tracker. It's actually available on Nostr as well. But it's a bot run by our boy Bitstein. And I think it's just good to keep things in perspective. Grounded in reality a bit.
Shout out to Plebe Anon for the 21,000 Zap on Zap.stream. Merry Christmas to you. Thank you for joining the live stream. Next up on the list, news out of El Salvador. They've reached a staff-level agreement with the IMF on an extended fund facility arrangement. This is for about $1.4 billion U.S. dollars. And I'm sure many of you are aware this made a pretty big splash in the Bitcoin world because the IMF wanted El Salvador to change some of their Bitcoin law, particularly that merchants be compelled to accept it. And they also wanted them to shut down the government Chivo wallet. And so we have the official blog announcement from the IMF, and I can read what they say about Bitcoin specifically.
I mean, there's a couple of things here. First of all, people are reporting the 1.4 billion number, but this also, it includes like a bunch of their like sister organizations. It comes out to about a $3.5 billion loan package. So first of all, that's a lot of billions for a small country. Second of all, you know, Chivo, and people will say this is fucking cope. I've never been like a massive El Salvador stan or like a Bukele stan. Like oftentimes I'm critical of Bukele. $3.5 billion is a lot of fucking money, obviously. Chivo wallet fucking sucked, and it was close to being a CBDC. It was like a poorly implemented Bitcoin-backed CBDC program. So no love lost for shutting down Chivo. I think that was a relatively easy decision on the Salvadoran government. There's a lot of better options out there that the free market has provided people to use, including, you know, all the top open source Bitcoin wallets people can obviously use. The second piece is enforcing merchants have to accept Bitcoin. That wasn't being enforced anyway. And it's kind of ridiculous to expect the populace to be forced to accept Bitcoin. So I don't think that was necessarily, I don't think that's necessarily a big loss. Obviously, any merchant in El Salvador can accept Bitcoin if they want to accept Bitcoin. The third piece, accepting Bitcoin for taxes, I could see that being very frustrating for people that operate on a Bitcoin standard down there. Obviously, it'd be better if they just had no tax structure and moved to like a tariff-based system. I've grown more and more in favor of this like tariff-based system because it removes a lot of the financial surveillance that's required for enforcement, financial surveillance of your civilians. Last but not least, like my immediate reaction to this when I first saw the news and everyone freaking the fuck out was that he was going to use this opportunity and boost in liquidity to stack much more coin than they've been stacking. And he seems to be doing that. Like they have a I put their tracker that's powered by Mempool as the second link there. Like he's amplified his stacking. They were stacking one Bitcoin a day, and then all of a sudden they started doing 11 Bitcoin after this deal was announced. And people say like, oh, the IMF won't allow him to, you know, use this money to do it. If it unlocks a different pool of money, that you were using to spend on infrastructure and shit that now can be used to buy Bitcoin, it doesn't really matter. Like, it clearly seems like they've accelerated their Bitcoin buying. And at this point in this bull cycle, it's really hard to blame them. Like, do they have enough Bitcoin? No. Do any of us have enough Bitcoin? No. Like, if I could take out a loan, a $3.5 billion loan in an inflating currency and buy Bitcoin at very low long terms, I probably would fucking do it.
Yeah. Look, and pull that back up real quick. And I mean, does El Salvador have enough Bitcoin? You said no, but up a little bit. Let's see the total number that they have, 5,997.77. So approaching 6,000, almost half the stack that Bhutan has accumulated since 2020. And Bhutan is really going all in. Maybe not population-wise, but size-wise, I think Bhutan is comparable. And I think El Salvador, considering where they were just 5 years ago, 4 years ago even, the fact that they've turned the ship around, went from the most dangerous country in the world to one of the safest, and I know people aren't happy with the way which Bukele has gone about that, but it seems to be working. I think the people of El Salvador are happy that they're able to walk the streets safely. But like, to go from where they were to where they are and have almost 6,000 Bitcoin, I think that's pretty impressive. And the U.S. has confiscated a lot of Bitcoin, and other countries have done the same. Some countries like Germany are selling Bitcoin. I mean, comparatively, in indexing for the size of their population and their economy, I think El Salvador is punching way above their weight class. And the fact that they're increasing their buying after this IMF loan was issued to them is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I agree. But I think, you know, they see an opportunity to seize the moment here and take advantage of some cheap debt. Now, historically, like, IMF loans are a massive tool of America and our proxies to basically like enslave developing world countries in long-term debt that they can never pay off and destroys their currencies. Gladstein's done a lot of good work on this front. But if you use it to stack Bitcoin, that might be the cheat code. You know, that's like, if you have the Bitcoin, you can pay off the IMF loan at any time in the future. You're not caught in this vicious debt cycle. And it probably will at some point break. Like, at some point, we just won't see these loans get given out. Just like at some point, the massive cheap debt opportunity that Saylor's taking advantage of, denominated in fiat, won't exist anymore. In the same way, like, our 30-year fixed rate mortgages denominated in dollars won't exist anymore.
It's almost as if there was an incredibly prescient piece written on July 4th, 2014 called Speculative Attack that basically predicted something like this. You take out a loan in a dying currency and you buy the stronger currency, and you're not worried about the debt repayment because the asset you're buying, the money that you're buying, is going to appreciate in purchasing power far greater than your loan repayment.
It's anyway. Like
Pierre Richard is a prophet almost. Yeah.
There's no shot in hell that I'm moving my family to El Salvador, period. But I get the play. I get the play, and I think some of the criticism has been a little bit ridiculous.
I'm not going anywhere either. American born and bred. Nowhere else to run, freaks. We're gonna, as our incoming president would say, make America great again. If not you, then who? If not me, then who? You gotta step up. I'm not going. I'm not running El Salvador. Very happy for them. It's not my country. All right. The next topic on the list is Tether investing in Rumble. This was pretty big news. Rumble has been posturing for the better part of a month, maybe a little bit longer than a month, that they are going to lean into Bitcoin. They announced that they're adding Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset to their corporate treasury. Their CEO was going on Fox Business News explaining how he wanted to help content creators monetize via Bitcoin. And then 5 days ago, this announcement dropped. This is pretty massive investment from Tether. So Tether announced a $775 million strategic investment in Rumble to boost the decentralized and community-owned media platforms. And part of this is helping them with their Bitcoin treasury strategy and implementing the payments technology that would make it possible for content creators to monetize via Bitcoin. And this is a big slug of capital, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. If you looked at Rumble's financials, it looked like they were burned through cash rather quickly. And so this seems like a pretty big come up for them, almost $1 billion in capital. Whether or not they can use that capital to really invigorate the business, particularly its cash flows and hopefully profits at some point. But yeah, this is interesting, out of left field partnership that I did not see coming.
Logan, did I freeze or did Marty freeze?
That is Marty.
Nice. We can hear you though, Marty. You're just camera froze. Yeah, I mean, this is a massive investment. It seems like Tether almost bought half the company, like high 40s. It seems like the founder still has a controlling share, or maybe low 40s they bought, but it seems like the valuation was around $2 billion, with massive valuation for Rumble. Also, just for some stats, Rumble lost $120 million, if I recall correctly, over the last 2 years. So they're very far from profitability. This seems like a very strategic move, and you kind of have to, I have to applaud Tether in terms of, you know, making this deal with in such a big way. And it seems like it's very ideologically motivated, and it's meant to have, you know, a bigger foothold in terms of the media landscape going forward. The expectation here is that Tether payments and Bitcoin payments will be added to the Rumble platform. Tether also is believed to have made $10 billion in profit this year. So they've taken a little bit less than 1/10 of that profit and put it into, I don't think people really appreciate how insane that is. $10 billion in profit with a very small team is a massive, massive business in terms of success. So they have the money to go around. They've obviously been building a massive Bitcoin position as well. I believe they have over, like, high 80,000 in Bitcoin, maybe like 86,000 Bitcoin. So they have a massive Bitcoin position, and that position is growing. And then in the meantime, they're making these strategic investments. But yeah, cool to see. I mean, obviously YouTube has been horrible in terms of censorship. Rumble, while centralized, like, I think the ideal option is a non-centralized option long-term, but Rumble, while centralized, has pushed back on censorship in a big way as a contrast to YouTube. So cool to see Tether support that, and we'll see how this all plays out.
It will be really interesting, particularly if they're able to successfully implement Bitcoin streaming tips, like Bitcoin super chats. I mean, as we see here with Zap.stream, it has been a huge.
Yeah, they're going to do all of that.
Yeah.
It's going to be Tether and Bitcoin is going to be the play.
It'll be interesting. Again, talking about demand drivers for Bitcoin, we've experienced this on Zap.stream. It is far superior. We've never, ever implemented super chat on YouTube just because it's a headache, and not only for us, but for the end user to connect their debit or credit card and the manage payouts. But with Zap.stream, it's pretty seamless. And I wonder if implementing something like that on Rumble to an audience of content creators that are not as forward thinking as we are in terms of monetizing via Bitcoin, if that has an unlock for them and they recognize the inherent superiority of this way of getting paid out for streaming video almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I think it becomes a massive top of funnel for Bitcoin with an established user base. I think if you do the math from like an investor point of view, they would have been better off just buying Bitcoin, which is why I say it's ideological and strategic. Like, it's hard to imagine that buying nearly $1 billion worth of Rumble is a better investment in 10 years than just buying Bitcoin. But if you think about the indirect benefits that they see across the flywheel there, I could see how it could be very valuable for them as a strategic foothold. The other piece that I feel like a lot of people aren't talking about is Tether's heavily invested in Keet and Hole Punch, which is this serverless connection protocol, communication protocol that doesn't require servers, that goes P2P. And I wouldn't be surprised if they start playing around with some of the Keet Hole Punch stuff on the Rumble side. Probably not as a, servers just work better in terms of distributing media. So probably not a full-on switch, but you could see a world where they give people the option to broadcast directly to their audience using something like Hole Punch, which could be very interesting.
Yeah. It will be fascinating to watch. I think with the incoming Trump administration, if you look at the investors of Rumble, it took them public. Yeah. I think a lot of them are close to the Trump administration.
Vance was one of the seed investors, vice president.
Yeah. The point I'm trying to make here is like there is that conservative leaning investment community that's really been focused on defense tech and censorship resistance. They really, for some reason or another, up until recently, I haven't really caught on to Bitcoin, but it feels like every day the circles are becoming more concentric, where that type of investor and the people that care about these particular problems are beginning to recognize Bitcoin as a necessary part of the solution. And if you don't have Bitcoin in these solutions, they're pretty much screwed from the get-go. So it's good to see people wising up to this, whether or not Rumble will be able to successfully implement it and prevent themselves from burning as much cash as they have in recent years is another question, but I'm wishing them luck. I hope they figure it out.
I mean, that's a good point you make, though, that obviously the incoming vice president was one of the early investors of Rumble. Cantor Fitzgerald was the firm that brought them public. So it definitely also buys them some goodwill with the incoming administration, which is hard to objectively quantify how much that is worth, but it can be worth quite a lot.
Yeah. Speaking of worth quite a lot, Michael Saylor and his corporation are worth quite a lot. And he came out and released Digital Asset Framework last week. And it's basically like a short 3-page document that puts forth what Michael Saylor believes the government should do in terms of creating a digital asset framework and defining the principles and the opportunity that it presents for the United States. And so defining digital assets, getting into the taxonomy, the legitimacy in terms of establishing rights and responsibilities around property rights, practicality, what can you actually do with this technology, and then vision from a capital markets perspective and opportunity moving forward. Really cool to see him do that and flex the domain michael.com.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a massive flex hosting it on michael.com. the guy's the original domain hoarder. Or hoarder's derogatory. It's just impressive. Like, you're a billionaire, you might as well hold michael.com your first name. He has hope.com. He's got great domains. So yeah, that was a flex. I like this framework. I think it's very clean and concise and is, pretty, it seems pretty sound. I think it was 2 or 3 pages, which is always a breath of fresh. Yeah. It's a breath of fresh air. We're not lawyers. Like, it's nice to just have like a very clean document. What I do think people are sleeping on here, though, is he makes a very clear distinction between, dollar coins, quote unquote, stable coins versus everything else. He calls those digital currency. What are the different categories he has there? I don't have it up in front of me. One is Bitcoin. He calls it digital commodity. Then shitcoins are digital securities, and then dollar tokens are digital currency. I wouldn't sleep on the dollar coins, the digital currency piece. Like, it seems like he's leaning into this more and more. I don't know how exactly it plays out, but I think part of it is the fact that Tether has made $10 billion in profit this year. And anyone without a brain is paying attention to that being like one of the most successful business models of all time, which is just holding treasuries and not giving the interest to your users, because the users don't expect the interest. So you just collect the interest yourself and stack sats with it. Logan, I did a clip out of his recent CNBC appearance. Can you play that video? It's 2 minutes.
You know, the great opportunity in the United States is to issue the world's reserve digital currency. There's about $150 billion of stablecoin currency, and Tether is the leader. But they can't locate in the United States because we don't have a sufficiently clear regulatory framework for issuing digital currencies. If the U.S. normalizes that, there's no reason why U.S. banks and U.S. companies can't issue $10 trillion of digital currency backed by U.S. dollar currency equivalents sitting in U.S. banks. That would be tremendously good for the United States. When I'm saying that the U.S. should allow U.S. banks and U.S. corporations to issue a token backed by the U.S. dollar that would be backed by trillions of dollars of U.S.
Like a stable coin.
Yeah, a stable coin. Tether, Circle, they're stable coins.
But isn't that a big threat to the monetary system, the Fed?
Well, if we actually normalize that, then there's going to be $10 trillion of demand for U.S. treasuries. It's the best thing you could do for the dollar. What it means is that all 8 billion people on the planet will be using the U.S. dollar on their Android phones and their iPhones in order to trade with each other. That would be great for American values and the American currency. Sarah, the point is people in Russia and China and Africa and South America can't trade with the U.S. dollar directly because they don't have U.S. dollar bank accounts. They're using Tether. And they're using Tether because they desperately want access to the dollar on their mobile phone. And right now, the U.S. doesn't have regulatory clarity that allows a U.S. corporation to issue a U.S. dollar-backed stablecoin that works for the Chinese, the Russians, the Africans, the Europeans. And so if the U.S. wants to be the world reserve digital currency, you don't want $150 billion issued by an offshore entity. What you want is $10 trillion of U.S. dollar stablecoin issued by U.S. regulated banks and U.S. regulated companies with the money onshore in the United States backed by U.S. treasuries. The demand is there. We just need a digital assets framework in order for that entire industry to come to life.
So this interview was, I believe, the day before he released the digital asset framework. And it was a 12-minute interview. He does talk about Bitcoin in it, not just stablecoins. And most of my clipping was just removing the host because she was kind of annoying, asking poor questions. And I just made it just a straight sale or two minutes. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it seems, so going back to his actual digital assets framework and seeing how he defines a digital currency, an asset with an issuer backed by fiat currency. Because I'm trying to think, is he co-opting cryptocurrency? And I don't think so. Like Bitcoin, that's what I worry about. We've talked about this publicly, and you even discussed this on stage at Bitcoin Park with Saylor during the conference week in July about using Bitcoin as payment. And I think that's one thing that many people, myself included, are worried about. This framing of boxing Bitcoin into a digital commodity and potentially preventing it from being used as a day-to-day currency in the future with some sort of legal structure or jargon that defines it as something that it's not. And I don't know, though. I think he's very deliberate with this language. So when I hear backed by a fiat currency, I think he's just trying to de-alienate between the digital commodity, which is an asset without an issuer backed by digital power, e.g. Bitcoin, even though it's not really backed by power, it's backed by the assurances that are afforded by its consensus and the full node topography. But I think there's an attempt to create like a clear demarcation and definition. The one thing, again, I worry about and we should be vigilant about is trying to box Bitcoin into the corner as a digital commodity, which prevents it from being used as a day-to-day currency, which we are doing right now on the stream as you guys are zapping us and streaming us stats if you're listening on Fountain or an app like that. And I think it'll be important from a narrative perspective and a framing perspective to highlight that any free market money, or the, put another way, like throughout history, economies that utilize free market monies have created a shelling point around commodities, particularly gold, that turned into the day-to-day currency. And so I don't know. I still don't know what to think. It seems like he's trying to just create clear definitions that clearly separate everything, and the way he's defined it, like a digital currency. Like if I were to add one sort of addendum to this particular taxonomy, I would add digital fiat currency. And if it was named that and defined the way in which it is, I think that's completely, it's descriptive of what it is. But if that's the only thing that can be a digital currency, is something that is an asset with an issuer backed by fiat currency, that could be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, by design, we don't need anybody's permission to use Bitcoin. So the definitions only matter so much. Like I said in the beginning, I think the framework for its intended purpose is pretty clean and concise, and it's hard to complain with it. But it does feel like he's getting a little bit stablecoin curious in terms of, once again, Tether making $10 billion in profit this year. So it'll be interesting to watch play out. Just something that I wanted to put a pin in and have people pay attention to. I would say there's a non-zero chance. He specifically called Tether out by name and was like, we should try and compete with Tether. A non-zero chance that we see a Sailor versus Tether kind of mini battle happen this cycle, which would just be incredibly interesting to watch, because anyone who's tried to compete with Tether has just failed miserably.
Yeah. Don't come at the pirate ship unless you unless you're ready to actually compete. And I would be more generous to what I think he was trying. I think from what I heard, at least in the first part of the clip, was Tether operates offshore because the legal framework doesn't exist in the United States to make them comfortable domiciling within the U.S. borders. The way I read that line was just create a legal framework and this very successful business will potentially do something in the United States, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of gave that opening in the beginning and then he just repeated over and over again, issued by banks based here, not Tether. He didn't go back to Tether moving here. I don't know. Look, the steel man of the argument, which a lot of people would agree with, is that he's playing 5D chess. He's saying things deliberately that he might, not necessarily believe. So we'll see how it plays out, And fortunately, it requires no permission to use Bitcoin. So if you believe in Bitcoin's use as freedom money, as the digital currency of the world, simply use it as such. And a huge shout out to Pauly, who zapped us 21,000 sats and said peace and prosperity to all.
Thank you, Pauly. It's a great message to get out there on Boxing Day. Next up on the list, like Matt said, we'll put a pin on that particular framing from Sailor and follow it as that framing develops and what MicroStrategy tries to do with that framing moving forward, and Sailor himself. But yeah, stay vigilant, folks. Next up on the list, Craig Wright. Man is certainly not Satoshi. Got suspended. Gets a suspended one-year sentence in the UK for continuing to sue Bitcoin developers. What is this?
Seems like it's a massive win. Long time coming, but massive win. Love to see it. Craig Wright is a fraud.
Yeah. We don't need to spend time on him. We've spent enough airtime on him over the last 6 years.
Yeah. But it's important to revel in the little victories, the little wins.
Yeah. Screw that, man. Next up, better story. Human Rights Foundation grant 20 projects. And as is tradition, I will read off every single project. Strata V2, reference implementation, public pool, Nayama, Danielle Brozoni, Michael Hayes, No Bullshit Bitcoin. Shout out to No Bullshit Bitcoin. Easy. You deserve it. Tondo, Yakihoni, Seed Signer, Vexel, Tomatech, Crux, Iris, African UX Bitcoin Bootcamp, Bitcoin History, Pete Rizzo, getting that research project granted. Shout out to you, Rizzo. Cashew-TS, Unify, the Financial Freedom Policy Coalition, John Attack, shout out to John, OG Bitcoin Core contributor, and Brink. Shout out to Brink as well. And Michael Schmidt. So 20 projects, 7 Bitcoin, 700,000 cut bucks around there right now allocated to these 20 projects. And with that, we will transition to the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, which is coming from Malaysia, where the parliament has passed repressive media bills amidst financial struggles. Earlier this year, Malaysia's ringgit currency plunged to a 26-year low, driving up prices nationwide as families struggled with a higher cost of living. Officials passed an amendment granting law enforcement the power to freeze bank accounts suspected of fraud. Meanwhile, Malaysia's parliament is passing two more bills to regulate media and online spaces, allowing officials to censor content and request user data from service providers without approval. Critics warn that vague language in these laws will likely be exploited to silence dissent and stifle public discourse. As financial hardships mount, Malaysia's online speech becomes increasingly controlled, eroding freedom of expression and financial autonomy. For more stories like this, make sure you subscribe to the Financial Freedom Report, which is a newsletter that comes out every Thursday morning. And you can do that at financialfreedomreport.org. To be expected. Prices are going to go up. Yeah. Prices are going to get out of control. They're going to try and censor.
Yeah, I mean, two things. First of all, a huge shout out to HRF with their latest round of grants. Between the work we're doing at OpenSats and they've been doing with their dev fund, I'm incredibly optimistic on the year ahead in terms of open source developer funding. It's been a massive year for both organizations, and we only go forward. We only push forward. It's only going to be a bigger year next year. I think the OpenSats, I'm supposed to, Gigi sent me our year in review draft yesterday on Christmas. And I told him I'd get him back edits shortly. So we should be releasing that in the next few days. We'll cover that next rabbit hole recap. And then on this story, I thought it was important to highlight because it shows on both sides, on the Bitcoin side and the Nostr side, about why it's incredibly important for us to build out these freedom tools and these open protocols that don't require permission. Because regardless of your current situation in your current country, there are billions of people that live under these authoritarian regimes that need the tools, and they need the tools today. They need freedom money, and they need freedom of speech, protected at the protocol level, with code and not laws. Ideally, laws too, but code is actionable, and we can do real change today. So, shout out to everyone who's building out these things, whether it's on the Bitcoin side or the Nostr side or the combination of the two. Right, as we see with Zapstream. We're using both Nostr and Bitcoin for Zapstream, which is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. The tried and true tactic. Inflation gets out of hand. People start complaining. Got to censor it. It's not the government's fault. There's some exterior force, whether that's greedy capitalist or foreign nations that are attacking your currency. Really, it's just fiat currency. It's the way it works. It's the inevitable outcome of all fiat currencies. They will all inevitably be debased to shit, including the U.S. dollar. And as Americans, that's why it's important that we do whatever we can to ensure that Bitcoin succeeds and other freedom tech like Nostr, the open source distributed communications protocol, succeeds as well for when this happens, which brings up something I'm going to throw on the list that we've been, I told you freaks a few weeks ago to pay attention to, and there's been an update there, particularly with the 25 basis point cut that the Fed made last week. And I've been saying it over the last couple of months, what will be important to observe as the Fed continues to cut rates is how the 10-year and 30-year Treasury yield reacts to that. And as you can see, for the first time in history, when there's been 100 bips of rate cuts, the 10-year yield has also raised by 100 bips. And so I pointed out that since September, when the Fed started cutting rates, historically, when the Fed cuts rates, the long end of the yield curve comes down lower because they expect inflation to come down and the economy to be doing well. But that has not been happening. They've been moving in divergent fashion and basically perfectly inversely correlated since September. And anytime the Fed cuts rates further, the 10 yield blows out even higher. So I believe now it's at 4.7%. And this is also important. We've talked about this in the past. Next year, due to the fact that Janet Yellen, as Treasury Secretary, has really over-indexed on the short end of the curve, she's issued notes and bills, which are shorter term, anywhere from a few months to a few years. I think next year, if I recall correctly, there's something like $7 trillion worth of treasuries that need to be rolled over and reissued. And if you're doing this on the long end of the curve and yields are going up, that means it's going to be way more expensive to roll those over, particularly as it pertains to how much we pay on the interest expense on the debt that's being issued. So obviously that's been a big meme this year. The interest expense on the debt exploded above $1 trillion for the first time ever. I believe only Social Security, Medicaid, and the military-industrial complex make up more spending than what we're paying on the interest expense on the debt right now. And if this continues, the Fed cutting rates and the long end of the yield curve going up, despite that, it's not going to be good for this debt rollover. And so it would not be surprised if this time next year, we're looking at an annual interest expense on the debt that's well above $1.5 trillion, approaching $2 trillion a year, which is pretty insane.
Those who read Mandibles are not surprised by this. Mandibles, the Bitcoin Standard.
Not shocked at all. Not shocked at all.
You either read it or you live it. Fortunately, we have Bitcoin on the other side, so the future is still bright. It's just going to have a bit of a dark period in between.
Have you heard from Lionel recently?
She's holding. Unlike the blue checks on Twitter, she actually holds her Bitcoin in self-custody rather than an IOU.
There we go, Lionel.
To the new coiners who are joining us, Lionel is the author of Mandibles, and she originally thought Bitcoin was going to fail. And so I had her on my show, Citadel Dispatch, and we had a great conversation. And then towards the end, I started talking to her about Bitcoin. I waited till the very end. And she's a Bitcoiner now, and she believes that, you know, Bitcoin is the solution here long term. And so I onboarded her to a self-custody wallet that she was able to use. And posted a Bitcoin address, and the freaks donated over a Bitcoin to her. And that was at like $18,000. And she's held through it all. So she's a ride or die now.
Shout out to you, Lionel. Great book. One of my favorites. Schuster asking in the Zap Dive Stream live chat, is Marty an alcoholic? No, I'm not. It is Boxing Day. It has been a long Christmas. I did open up a Guinness before noon today, but Boxing Day is, believe it or not, in Philadelphia, a widely celebrated holiday right after Christmas. And so just having a little Guinness, a little morning coffee with the rip. Don't do this often. If you've been watching the live streams, I very rarely drink on the show anymore, but I thought today, holiday season, Boxing Day, I would enjoy a Guinness, a nice stout. Okay.
I'm, and for what it's worth, I'm not drinking right now. It's supposed to be like a healthy energy drink. I don't know how true that is, but very low in sugar. It's called Bing. It's a horrible name. It's like 2 grams of sugar, and it uses cane sugar, not a
high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
There was another.
That's pretty good. Energizing juice beverage. I'm sure the freaks will tell me why it's horrible for me, but it's got vitamin C in it. It seems like all natural flavors. Seems pretty good. Tastes good.
Yeah.
Caffeine helps.
It does. Greg is asking what our New Year's resolutions are. I think we'll save that for January 2nd when we'll meet next.
In the next round. I want to talk about this horrible trend on Bitcoin X that is encouraging people not to self-custody their Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And to buy the ETF instead.
I've admittedly not been on X a lot this week, been spending time with family, but when I have peered onto the app sporadically throughout the last few days, I've seen people, I'm like, why the hell are people even talking about this right now?
This is something that we see kind of on repeat every cycle, that people say self-custody is too difficult. This is the first time ETFs have existed, so it's kind of taken an even darker turn, where it's like, oh, just have BlackRock custody your Bitcoin with Coinbase. So have two points of failure added on top of your Bitcoin. This is also the first cycle that, I mean, self-custody has never been easier than it is today. I would say that anyone who can buy the ETF can securely hold Bitcoin on a BitKey. BitKey is by block. You can go to BitKey.world. It's in Best Buy, Amazon. Strictly better than owning an ETF in terms of trust. And so I would put that out there. I would say cold card remains my favorite way to securely hold Bitcoin. It is a little bit more complicated than BitKey, but I think it's prudent to learn. I think just like it's prudent to learn how to drive or raise a child, hard things tend to be good for you. So you can do it. Anyone who's listening to the show can do it. So I would recommend cold card or BitKey. I think a lot of influencers overwhelm people in terms of their recommendations, and they make it seem way more difficult than it has to be. I think the risks of single sig for the average person are overplayed. I think particularly public individuals like Marty and I, multi-sig makes a lot more sense from a risk point of view because we are exposed publicly. So multi-sig really helps in $5 wrench attacks specifically and organizations. But for the average person, the overwhelming majority of Bitcoin is lost, not stolen. And the easiest way to protect... Yeah, the easiest way for you to protect yourself from it is very simple self-custody. And that's why I really like BitKey, and that's why I really like a single sig cold card in this situation. You set up a duress pin. You can even use something called Seed XOR, which splits your seed into 2 seeds so you don't have a single point of failure. Just put that seed into metal. And take slow steps. You know, take slow steps to use it. I would say go on.
I was going to say, that's like just... The onus is on you. I'm sure you're on X. People are saying things. You're getting afraid. Take the small step. We used to give this advice out almost weekly, and hand up on us, haven't been doing it. But practice makes perfect. Having used wallets for the better part of a decade now, it gets easier. You get more comfortable. And believe it or not, people think you would get more complacent, but you actually get more vigilant in terms of how you're doing your setups and where you're keeping your backups and how you're securing your wallets. Practice makes perfect. Download Blue Wallet or any other mobile wallet. Move Bitcoin from the exchange to the Blue Wallet. Small amount. Wipe the wallet. Recover from seed. And then think about how you protect that seed. It's pretty simple. And as you use it, yeah, as you make more transactions and do all of it, you'll get more comfortable.
It just practice. Practice makes perfect, like everything else. But it's very accessible, and it's way easier than you think it is. And paternalistic influencers that don't actually use the fucking tools are steering you wrong when they say it's too difficult and that you should just go and cuck up and buy the ETF instead. And I'm not saying that the ETF isn't a, you know, worthwhile investment vehicle for plenty of people. It obviously has its own use case, particularly in retirement accounts, even though you can do self-custody of retirement accounts. I understand that. I'm not pretending that it doesn't have a shit ton of fucking demand and is used by a lot of people, but nothing replaces self-custody Bitcoin. And it's very powerful. It's incredibly powerful for the individual to be able to self-custody and use it yourself. I would also say... Yeah.
So you feel that power when you do it too. Like the first time you recover from seed and the first time you internalize, like, I have control over this money, it makes you feel powerful.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would, yeah, it's, you got to try yourself. And if you're overwhelmed, like I said, start with the BitKey. Start with the BitKey. It's incredibly easy. It's really hard to fuck up. You don't have to watch a tutorial. You can literally just go into Best Buy, buy it. And then download the app and follow the steps. You don't need any tutorial or anything. If you can use email, you can use the BitKey. I would also say that if you have one single piece of advice that you could give your new coiner friends, it's that they should use Nostr instead of X. We provide much better advice and have much better open discussion on Nostr than on X right now. And the easiest way to do that is to download Primal in your favorite app store. So if you've used Nostr like 2 years ago, we've come a long way. I would say re-download it, check it out, come join us. And if you've never used it, download it for the first time. But I was really, I've many piss poor takes on X recently in terms of self-custody and the trade-offs, being very missold on the ETF stuff. And then also last but not least, yes, I saw that some guy lost money on a Ledger. Ledger fucking sucks. Like, Ledger's really, really bad. Like, if you have friends that are using Ledgers, you should have them switch. And if they're non-technical, they should switch to a BitKey. And if they're even just a little bit technical, they should switch to a cold card. But Ledger's UX is fucking horrible. They prioritize shitcoins. They prioritize this ability for you to stake, you know, thousands of different shitcoins. They automatically make your PIN three miss attempts and it wipes your device. They do not let you reopen your seed after you've initialized a Ledger. So if you're not sure if you wrote down right and saved it right, or if you lose your seed, you have to reinitialize a new Ledger to get access to that seed phrase. It's just a foot gun accident waiting to happen. A foot gun's when you accidentally shoot yourself in the foot. So the real takeaway here is fuck Ledger. Not everyone should buy the ETFs instead.
I'll add one more half takeaway, which is know where your seed phrases are. It seems like this guy may be fine if he's able to find a seed phrase, but that's a big problem. He tried to put his PIN in, he put it in wrong too many times and it bricked the Ledger. He doesn't have the seed phrase. So part of good practice in terms of backing up is if you use a seed phrase, whether you write it on paper, which we don't recommend, get it in steel, just get it. An eye check on the seed phrase once a quarter, once every 6 months.
Yeah, the seed phrase is the Bitcoin, the secret words. As long as you have the secret words, you have your Bitcoin. If you lose the secret words or if someone takes them from you, then you lose your Bitcoin, right? If someone else has the secret words, then they can spend your Bitcoin. So the secret words are everything. And so you also want to check, not only do you want to keep them secure and make sure no one else takes them, you want to check that they work. I've had friends that have wrote down the words wrong. And If you're on Gold Card, you can review the words. If you're not, if you're on Ledger, you can't. Like I said, you can't review the words. One way to do it is you get a second hardware device and you put the word, you restore as if you're restoring for backup. That second hardware device should show your Bitcoin if you wrote them down correctly. So that's why in my guide on werunbtc.com/coldcard, I tell people to get two cold cards, secure the backup, reinitialize on the second cold card so you know your backup is correct. And then you actually have two initialized devices, which is great. Another piece is Krebs on Security came out with this piece about how someone lost their Bitcoin from a phishing scam. Someone pretending to be Google and got access to their Google Cloud. Never take a picture of your seed words. If it's sitting on Google Cloud and someone gets access to your Google Cloud or iCloud or whatever, they can obviously steal your money. And I will say this is one of the underrated benefits about BitKey is that they don't use seed words. So they protect you from the foot gun of taking a picture of your words. But don't take a picture of it. Don't send it in a text message. Don't store it in Apple Notes or Google Keep. Offline. Store it offline securely. Ideally in Steel.
Yeah, and I mean, and then, ideally,
yeah. Go on.
You like going back to like the Blue Wallet example, like that I used earlier. Just use that to get comfortable with creating a private public key pair, sending Bitcoin, a small amount of Bitcoin to that public key, then wiping and recovering. But once you do that recovery, if somebody has like a keystroke monitor, like they technically could potentially know what your seed phrase is. So be aware.
That's what's nice about hardware wallets, right? You should only be entering it into the hard. If you're using a hardware wallet, you should only be entering it directly into the hardware wallet. You shouldn't be entering it into a computer. And then, yes, you can think about more complicated setups in the future once you get comfortable with single sig. Multi-sig is fucking great. It's just not for most people, at least right now. Like for most people, you're probably better off with single sig. But yeah, that's my rant and my PSA.
And if you're comfortable if you're comfortable with BitKey, you're comfortable with this, but if you want to go to multi-sig and you're not comfortable managing it by yourself, a company like Unchained doing collaborative custody is a nice happy medium to meet you halfway, to take on the burden of that multi-sig wallet with you.
I will just say that comes with privacy risk.
Yeah.
Like then Unchained knows how much Bitcoin you have and knows your identity. And I would not say that strictly that is better for most people than just a single SIG wallet that they manage themselves, because it is a big trade-off, especially if your government ends up being anti-Bitcoin at some point in the future. So it's important to keep that in mind. It's not one size fits all. Influencers that pretend it's one size fits all are full of shit. Personal responsibility takes responsibility. Exercise it.
Practice makes perfect. Yeah. Do not. Like, if you want to do it, try it. You should do it. It's way easy. If I can do it, you can do it. I'll just say that. If I can do it, you can do it. My son's got a wallet that he checks in on. He's 4.
Should we read the boosts?
Oh, we should.
We have two weeks of boosts. Sorry, freaks. We forgot to read the boosts last week.
Do-do-do. We'll go to RIP. 335. Bitcoin steady at 100K. Sean, 10,000 sats. Odell, in a hyper-Bitcoinized world, there will be more than 21 million Bitcoin worth of value when it's the unit of account. So Microsoft, 30 million BTC isn't impossible.
No, that's retarded. He's wrong.
You heard it here first, Sean.
Right? That doesn't make any sense.
I'm trying to think through this. The first time I'm reading this.
He thinks if Bitcoin is the standard, and it is the reserve currency of the world, that you could have a business that is worth more than the total Bitcoin supply.
Well, Bitcoin is base money. So Sean might be right. Like, Bitcoin is comparable to the M0 monetary base. Globally right now, that's 30.
No, but you're comparing it to a fiat world.
Yeah, but like all the value in the world is considerably more than 30 trillion. I don't know. If you think of like a company with cash flows and the value of that company trades at a multiple to different metrics, maybe.
Post Bitcoinization, you're overthinking it. Post Bitcoinization, there can't be a company that's worth more than 21 million Bitcoin. Most companies will be worth significantly less than that.
You heard it here first.
There won't be one that even comes fucking close.
Next up from Matt, 7,000 sats. Great show. Thanks, guys. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you too, Matt.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, this was right after my Abu Dhabi trip. Blockchain Bug, 5,000 sats. Get some sleep, Marty. I did. I'm caught up. Thank you, Blockchain Bug. And then B Lightning Bolt, 500 sats. Salute. Last week's episode, the best Bitcoin timeline. Yeah, it was low. Boosts are getting lower. I think everybody's on Zap.stream.
Yeah.
Top four boosts from last week's rip, the best Bitcoin timeline, rabbit hole recap 336. Number one from Ape Mithrandir, 7,777 sats, sevens across the board, palindrome boost. I would rather they provably burnt all seized Bitcoin instead of stealing them and putting them in the government coffers. This is a very Odellian point of view.
I agree. I've said that a shit ton of fucking times. Unfortunately, that's probably unlikely to happen, but I would like to see that happen too.
Corey San Diego, 7,000 sats. I think your catchphrase should evolve to address the self-custody rug pulls. How about eliminate SPFs, test redundancies, single points of failure, test redundancies? Marty Bent, you can also evolve from Pikachu to Raichu. Peace and love, freaks. Raichu. I don't say Pikachu. I say Pika.
Well, first of all, stable stack sats implies that you're holding self-custody because otherwise you're stacking IOUs. So there's been plenty of people that are like, oh, you got to add self-custody element to it. And now like self-custody, oh, you got to add different nuances. No, that's not overthinking it. Just practice makes perfect. Protect your setup. Get comfortable with it and hold self-custody Bitcoin.
Yeah, and eliminate single points of failure.
This single point of failure thing, what they're doing is they scare the motherfucking heavens out of people in terms of holding single sig Bitcoin. If not only have we seen single sig Bitcoin hardware wallet loss very, very tiny, we've seen single sig hot wallet loss on mobile hot wallets, very tiny amounts. It's very rarely you see like a big attack happen where people get rugged holding single sig in a mobile hot wallet. And strictly speaking, when we say hot wallet, it means it's connected to the internet. You're exposed to internet connected risk. You go offline, you greatly, greatly reduce that risk. And that's why hardware wallets and cold storage in general is recommended. But people go down this like ridiculous rabbit hole. They get everyone super, super scared. And then they go, oh, so you should buy the ETF, which is fucking ridiculous. It's insane. Like, I could scare the shit out of you about the ETF. I'm not going to do that either because that's not productive.
Just be the Chad meme. I know how to write down 12 to 24 words and protect a piece of paper and not have people get my hardware wallet. Like, just do those two things. Protect the piece of paper. Yeah. Write it down correctly. Protect it. Protect your wallet. If I can do it, you can do it. Next up.
Overthinking it.
Forrest, 3,500 sats. Pound. Thank you, Forrest. Last but not least, it's Among Us. Among Us. 21,000 sats. Or excuse me, 2,100 sats. Nice rip. Appreciate the positivity. Appreciate you. It's Among Us. We're going to have a discussion. I mean, Zap.stream blew out the boost this week by a considerable amount. Are we just going pure reading the live stream? Is this going to hurt participation of people?
We've been reading it. We read it when they zap us because we appreciate the support. But thank you, Ride or Die Live freaks. And hopefully one day, like I said, Fountain will track what happens on Zapstream. I think that time is sooner rather than later.
All right, that's all I got. You got anything? Should we get back to our families?
We've gotten some repeated requests from Carlos to add something new to the soundboard.
Oh, I want to talk about porn.
Take that off the soundboard right now, Logan. I did not authorize that addition.
Wait, can you press play again?
We're gonna have a stern.
Oh, I want to talk about porn.
I want to discuss this with you offline.
Wonderful. We got Foyzy in the Zap stream, zapped 21,000 sats, bullish on Chicago Bitcoiners. Thank you, Foyzy. Yeah, let's get back to our families. This has been a great rip, and Merry Christmas to all you freaks.
Peace and love.